to History Unpacked. If you enjoy the content, then consider subscribing or leaving a comment. We welcome any feedback, and it will be appreciated by our small team here. Today, we're diving into one of the darkest chapters in Irish history, the Great Famine, a catastrophe that left over 1 million dead and another 1 million in exile, and the scars of which still ripple through Irish identity today. This isn't just a story about crop failure, it's a story about empire, about suffering, and about survival. In the early 1800s, Ireland was a land of contradictions, a rich landscape of green hills, fertile soils, and tight-knit communities, yet its people lived in grinding poverty. Why? Because of a system built on inequality. Ireland was under British rule. The majority of land was owned by Anglo-Irish landlords, many of whom lived abroad in England, collecting rent from tenant farmers who toiled in poverty. The Irish peasantry, mostly Catholic, made up the lower rungs of society, with little political power and few rights. Now, enter the humble potato. Introduced to Ireland in the late 16th century, the potato wasn't just a staple, it became the foundation of survival. It was nutritious, easy to grow, and could thrive in small plots of land. By the 1840s, roughly a third of the Irish population, particularly the rural poor, depended almost entirely on the potato for food. That's over 3 million people reliant on a single crop. And then came the blight. The year was 1845 when disaster struck. Farmers noticed something strange. Their potato crops were turning black, rotten and oozing a foul stench. A mysterious disease was sweeping across Europe and it had reached Ireland. The culprit? A water mold that thrives in wet, cool climates. It decimated entire fields in days. That year, half the potato crop failed, but it wasn't just a one-off. In 1846, the crop failed again, and worse. And in 1847, the year that would become known as Black 47, famine swept across the country like a biblical plague. People ate grass, weeds, even boiled nettles. Whole families starved in mud cabins. Disease followed, typhus, dysentery, and relapsing fever, killing those already weakened by hunger. Roads and ditches were littered with corpses. In some places, coffins were reused. Others were buried without any at all. But here's the bitter truth. Ireland was still exporting food. Yes, you heard that right. Even as the Irish starved, ships left ports daily carrying wheat, oats, and cattle to England. Now, to understand why, we need to look at the ideology of the time. The British government, influenced by laissez-faire economics, believed in minimal interference. The market would sort itself out, they claimed. Providing direct aid would only create dependency. Some relief did come. Prime Minister Sir Robert Peel initially purchased Indian corn or maize from the Americas to feed the hungry. But it was hard to cook, unfamiliar, and nicknamed Peel's Brimstone because it was so indigestible. Workhouses were set up, soup kitchens opened, but it wasn't enough, and the administration shifted under Lord John Russell, who took a much harsher approach. In 1847, the British closed the soup kitchens and insisted famine relief should be the burden of the Irish landowners. But many landlords, already struggling, responded with evictions. Tens of thousands were thrown off their land, entire villages vanished. And while Parliament debated economics, people starved to death. When the famine came, the Great Irish Exodus. Between 1845 and 1855, over 1.5 million people fled the country. They boarded what became known as coffin ships, overcrowded and sanitary vessels bound for North America, Canada, and Australia. Conditions aboard were horrific. Disease spread quickly, mortality rates ranged from 10 to 30% on some journeys, but for many it was either risk the Atlantic or die at home. This mass emigration would scatter the Irish diaspora across the world, seeding Irish communities in cities like Boston, New York, Toronto, and Sydney. They brought with them their culture, language and stories, and the bitter memory of what they had left behind. By 1852, the famine had largely passed. The potato blight would continue to affect crops intermittently, but the worst was over. But the damage was immense. Over 1 million dead, another million gone abroad. Ireland's population would drop by a quarter and continue to decline for decades. The famine changed Ireland forever. The rural peasantry was shattered. The Irish language, once widely spoken, went into steep decline. And resentment towards British rule deepened, a seed that would grow into the nationalist movements of the late 19th and early 20th centuries. To many Irish people, this wasn't just a tragedy of nature, it was a man-made disaster. A slow-motion genocide, some would argue, fueled by colonial neglect and economic dogma. Whether you agree or not, there's no denying that it was preventable. In recent years, memorials and museums, from Dublin's famine memorial to the haunting sculptures in Boston and New York, ensure the dead are not forgotten. So, what does the famine teach us? It teaches us about the perils of economic ideology over humanity, about the fragility of food systems, about how suffering is often invisible until it's far too late. But it also shows us the strength of a people who, against all odds, survived, and whose descendants continue to shape the world.